You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
On the other side of the break, and I'm your host, Nikki Colombo. And we are back with Michelle DeChance. And I tell you, Michelle really did bring up some fantastic points about integrity there, guys, for our listeners out there on discerning what's real and what's not. Now, through my experience, nearly all of my guests have been targeted in some way for bringing out this information in various degrees. And just as an example, guys, we've just recently, in the last week or two, we've had a guy that had a YouTube channel called Secure 10 that recently admitted that most of his videos about UFOs were CGI, and he had contracts with advertisers and was rewarded with a $300,000 a year paycheck. Now, this is opposed to my guests, including myself, where there is a certain pattern where you can recognize when you start to speak out about this, where this is where discernment comes in and integrity comes in, where the pattern is at first your reputation is challenged, and then the second is your finances are either destroyed or interfered in some way, and then you realize you've become a targeted individual, and then you know, you have cyber stalking and gang stalking and all that kind of stuff and funny things going on in the house, and then sometimes it might evolve or explode into a MyLab situation where you think that you're actually having contact with ETs and it's actually the military. And and then strange accidents can happen. Your dog might die, or you get beaten up, or all these horrible things happen to you. And so if you look at those two scenarios, that's how you can tell the difference between what's really going on and people's testimonies, because most of my friends have been that are on my show, have been guests on my show, I've been friends with them for many, many years, and we have discussed our experiences together to find out and put the pieces of the puzzle together to find out what's really going on, to make sure that we really aren't crazy. So there you go, guys. And Michelle brought up some fantastic points there, particularly with, you know, the back engineering and the ships and stuff like that, and Bob Lazar. And Bob Lazar was recently on Larry King recently, which I thought was amazing that, you know, a mainstream media outlet would actually have Bob Lazar's, you know, testimony on live on his show to fully blow open what's really going on with all this high tech. And look, guys, I understand that we have to keep some, you know, secrets, you know, with weapons and all that kind of stuff. But when that stuff is interfered, where they are doing MyLab, MK Ultra, and experiments, and you know, and all that kind of, you know, low-level stuff, that's, you know, I kind of draw the line there, because we know that some of us, including myself, have had our DNA and our eggs and sperm taken to be traded off for high-tech and, you know, and the hybrid programs and all that kind of stuff. And that's where it gets pretty dark, and that's where, you know, people get very upset that it's, you know, a violation of human rights and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, we've come to the realization that also, you know, sometimes these experiments are done without the military's consent, and they've got no control of it now because of some of these treaties and agreements that were done years and years and years ago, particularly with Dwight Eisenhower. And I've had Laura Eisenhower on my show, and she goes into and you know all of the details about that and how he was tricked as well. And so, you know, we're kind of in a situation now where we just got to take the moment, each moment as it goes, and assess and be discerning and go on to Michelle's site, which is, what's your website, sweetie?
It's Nuforce, Nuforce, and that stands for Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study.
But it involves
way more than that.
And I'll put the link down in the description after the show so you guys can go onto his site and go through all the files. And have you got pictures? You've got pictures and stuff like that there as well?
I've got pictures. I've got I did a breakdown. All the links in the margin are all very important pages. I created a page. Well, for instance, I have crop circles. So I just basically took a sampling right up to 2005. I haven't really looked at all the latest crop circle patterns since 2005, but I basically put 200 pictures. There are two columns of 100 each, just to go from the very plain ones that were discovered in the late 80s right up to the more complex ones. Another page I have is about Majestic 12. Then I have the interesting pages, which is politicians and UFOs, military officers and UFOs, scientists and UFOs, astronauts and UFOs, cops and saucers, that's police and their own sightings made by police officers, celebrities and UFOs, and then who's who in ufology, skeptics and debunkers. So I have a list of skeptics of debunkers and debunkers. It included the late Dr. Michael Persinger, who was residing here in Sudbury, and he was a Laurentian University professor. He's the one with the magic helmet, as a matter of fact. Some of your listeners might remember he is the one who had a chamber where it had this magic helmet. And basically, he would activate this electromagnetic field around your temporal lobes, believing that he could make you experience similar things to ghost sightings, occupant sightings, whatever. And I always thought it was hogwash. But surprisingly, behind the scenes, turns out he was a believer. He even interviewed Ingo Swann, which is a famous remote viewer. And so it's funny how you have this dichotomy where publicly he's doing something that's demeaning to the whole field, but yet privately he believed in a lot of this stuff. And I work with a young man whose family was friends with his, and that's how I found this out. And yet I always looked to him as being my arch enemy kind of thing, because I even went to one of his presentations and I knew he was going to talk about light phenomena, basically tying into UFOs, because he had always said that Travis Walton got zapped by a ball of light. And I says, no, Travis Walton saw a structured object 90 feet away. You cannot mistake an object at 90 feet away for a ball of light. And the reason why, you know, and I've met Travis Walton a couple of years ago, and I even talked to him on the phone, like before the movie Fire in the Sky came out way back in 1993. And I like his story because he's never changed. He's never deviated from his story. That's also why I believe Bob Lazar, because Bob Lazar has never deviated from his story. And so these people here, they have a place somewhere on my website, because I've been fooled a couple of times by people who would show up at my presentations when I started doing public presentations way back when, and I've laid low since then because we had a fraud that came into town and swindled people out of their money. And his name was Bill Nell. I couldn't find this out before, and I didn't know until I spoke to my colleagues in Toronto who said, yeah, a lot of UFO researchers are after this guy because he – I don't know if he's claiming to be the son of a U.S. Air Force officer, or he actually is, but he actually would take other people's research and pass it off as his own. Now, for me, I recently got in hot water with a team from Sweden because I had grabbed some of their PDF documents and old publications. We're talking old publications in the 1950s and 60s that obviously people scanned, and I know how time-consuming scanning and PDFing documents is, or whatever. But this page I got, I grabbed it from, was more like a directory, not an actual website. And so I did not know who to ask permission for. But since then, I've gotten permission when I got myself in a little bit of hot water, because they noticed I had their publications on my site. And the thing I don't agree with what they said was that it's for other researchers for research purposes. I said, what about the layman, the people who want to find out what's been happening in Sweden, what's been happening in Australia, what's been happening in South America? How about those people? You know, UFO information, I know there's copyright laws, and it, when it comes to books, and usually when I find a YouTube video, I will link it to the YouTube, because people are still making money off of their own videos. But a lot of times I like to back up stuff, because if it disappears, and things have disappeared off the internet, there's no doubt about that. You know, very, very crucial videos or whatever, or documents. And my site says clearly on the bottom of the pages, though maybe it should be announced at the top. It says no infringement, no copyright infringement intended. It's for educational purposes only. I'm not even making money. And whatever money I make off selling my T-shirts, let's say, or the ball cap, helps in fixing my car. You know, nobody gets rich off the UFO topic. Oh, except Stephen Greer, which I don't agree with. Yeah. Yeah.
See, or David Wilcock.
See, Stephen Greer should have remained a surgeon and do this stuff on the side. Although I do tip my hat to him, because he brought all those ex-military and ex-subcontractors to come forward and tell their UFO stories, which is very, very important. But at the same time, nobody gets rich off of this and shouldn't. You know, when it comes to copyrights for books, I believe, that should stay. But thank God government documents are nobody's copyright. The people's taxes pay for the government documents, and so they belong to the people. And that's why if I can't go after old publications, newsletters from UFO groups that are very obscure or you never heard about. I mean, there's even publications on that page of theirs from Sweden that includes a lot of publications out of Australia. And it's fascinating stuff. That's not where I got the National Archives documents, though. I went to the actual National Archives, just like I went to the FBI website, and I grabbed all 16 of their bundles of 1,600 files. Because what if the site goes down? And plus, FBI documents, once they're made public, they're public domain. So, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that would actually convince people of this reality, because the government would not be wasting millions of dollars, wasting time producing documents if there was nothing to it.
Absolutely. You know what? You've crossed a bit of a wire. Like, who owns a sighting? You know, like, how can we trademark our experiences when there's a few other people seeing the same kind of stuff? And, you know, trying to make money out of it, that's a big red flag to me too, because, you know, a lot of people are writing books and stuff. Like, we don't make much money out of our books. We give probably more books away than what we make money out of. Our main intention is to get, you know, the word out there on how to use certain discernment or healing techniques and all that kind of stuff. And, you know what, Michelle, I've actually had photos on my phone that I've taken that have been altered on my phone.
Wow.
And I'm like, and friends of mine have actually sent them to me, and I've sent them to them, and then we go back and look at them, and we're like, okay, someone or something has altered the photos, because what we do is we zoom into a certain photo and crop it and have a look at what's really in there. And sometimes the ETs are actually showing us. They'll say, you know, like, I'll get a prompt to come outside and take a photo of this and that kind of thing, you know. And I know it's ET communication, because I know the difference between voice to skull, because I've experienced that as well. And, you know, you take a couple of shots and then you zoom in and you see more and more and more and more. And then you go back, you know, to that photo a few months later, and what you've cropped and zoomed is disappeared. So... So, you know, and it happens in video as well, you know. Yeah. So we don't really know actually who's doing it, whether it's the ETs or whether it's you know, something else as well. So it's very important to catalog and, you know, document everything for our future generations so that they know what we went through and what happened to us, you know, at the very beginning of this major movement that's, you know, about to blow wide open and for everybody to see, you know, and then people are going to really question and have an identity crisis and question themselves and question, you know, their religion and everything like that as well. It's going to be one of those most major things. Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that. I've questioned my religion. I was born Catholic. And to tell you the truth, I had the page up for a while, but I don't know if I brought it down. This is what I now believe. I believe that the Virgin Mary was artificially inseminated, that Jesus was one of theirs, but at the highest echelon of any creature, because all he talked about was love. He could do things that we could not do. He could defy gravity, could walk on water, could do all these things. And I don't think they were just made up stories. The other thing that I, in reference to abductions, I believe that one or two, I can't say which ones, because that's where I draw the line. When people tell me, oh, it's this person or that species, nobody knows which species is piloting which ship or which species is doing what. Sometimes, you know, the reptilians are evil. I mean, from what I heard about South America cases, it seems that they've divvied up the planet where certain species have certain territories and the other ones are not allowed to go there. So in South America, you've got the reptilian types. In the Norwegian areas, you've got the Nordics. In the Americas, you've got the variations of grays. There's tall, 5 foot tall grays and then the 3.5 foot tall grays. But I believe that one of these two species of these guys actually had their hand in our creation. And the abductions is a way by which they are monitoring our development as we go along. And then to even keep a better watch on us, they have a base on the far side of the moon, and they have bases, a perfect duck blind to keep watch on us while we're not even having access, like visual access to seeing what's there, and also under the oceans. And the sad thing is, because NASA is at least 80% controlled or military run, I'd be hard pressed that we ever find out the truth exactly on what they discovered when they went there with the Apollo missions. And I do believe we went there 6 times, although there's a percentage of the population that believes the Earth is flat, there's a percentage of the population that believe we never went to the moon. Well, I believe we went to the moon because a lot of those engineers are all from Canada. When we closed down, or our former prime minister, Diefenbaker, closed down the Avro Aero project, which was the best jet fighter of the time, we basically gave the technology away to the U.S. because when Avro Aero closed down, most of those engineers went to work for NASA. So if Canadian know-how had something to do with creating the Apollo missions and taking men to the moon, I believe we went there. And they obviously saw something that they weren't privy to tell the rest of the world about. And people have been speculating ever since. So it's a sad thing where our future generations is going to be stuck having to deal with whatever lies have been put forth. And then who's to say that we're not going to be, or they are not going to be, experiencing the same kind of UFO waves that used to come almost regularly every 5 years since 1947?
How interesting. You know, just talking about the moon, you know, when you watch the movie Contact with Carl Sagan, who wrote that, and you look at that movie and you see how that space machine that Jodie Foster goes through and how it blew up because of all that kind of stuff, and how they were filming it live. Now, what I believe is that we went to the moon a lot earlier than what was actually televised on, you know, American TV, only because they couldn't afford to have something not, you know, blow up in their face or something malfunction, because there are a lot of taxpayers there paying for these projects. And so I think what's happened is there is a mixture of fake photos and real photos. And that's what's confusing everybody. The fake photos, the real photos, the photos that are smudged, and the timeline. So the thing is that we did go to the moon, but we didn't go at that time. And there are photos, but some of them have been smudged down. Some of them are fake. And because they had all that simulation stuff with, you know, they had, like, you know, a simulation for the actual astronauts to practice before they went in. You know, they got a lot of that stuff and made out, you know, and used all that simulation stuff to confuse the, you know, the general public. And I just think that was because, you know, there's just no way they would have had something like that live happening on live TV just in case everything blew up in their face and they lose all their taxpayer money. So I think there's a bit of a clarification there when it comes to the moon. I also believe that there is, a base on the dark side, and it used to look like a Nazi swastika. And I'd say that with marbles in your mouth too. And now it's kind of being built out now too. And apparently when we did get to the moon, the reptilians were, you know, in a crater, and they were giving us the finger, basically telling us to F off, you know. So I hear stories about that as well. So like you said about how there's different ETs in different countries. When I've talked about my experiences when I've seen the greys at the foot of my bed, they're more blue than they are grey. I mean, they're still grey, but they're kind of like a more of a darker blue-grey, you know. Yeah. So, you know, I'm finding that other Australians are describing them as well, whereas more, you know, in America, they're describing them as typical greys that look like the grey skin from a dolphin. You know what I mean? It's got that kind of that tone to it. So, and that, you know what, the guys, there's so many different races out there and so many different, you know, agendas and intentions and stuff. And this is what we're trying to all work out. We're trying to all put the pieces of the puzzle together to get a clear picture of what's really going on. And we have really, despite all the suppression, we have actually moved quite forward, especially in the last 10 years. And that's why, you know, when we bring out all this fantastic information and we've got people like Michelle doing fantastic databases and keeping that all catalogued, this is for our future generations and for us to go back in reference to tie in different scenarios and different experiences and different traits and all that kind of stuff to get a clearer picture, so that, you know, when they finally do decloak and they finally do, you know, reveal themselves on a massive scale, we won't be so afraid seeing them. Because, you know, I can tell you guys right now, whenever you, the first time you ever see a UFO, or if you ever see an alien grey at the bottom of your bed, it changes you forever.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got about 3 minutes until the next break. Michelle, so what do you quickly want to talk about before we have our next break, sweetie?
Well, that's speaking about the alien species, I think there's, I don't know what happened with the landing cases, but it seems like they've gone on to do something else. And I'm not talking about the grays. I'm talking about those first and single time observations. See, that's why I've had to separate those on my website. When you go under the page of UFO occupants, the ones that are there that you first see are, I have these action figures that I got from Florida, and it shows seven different species, including a real Men in Black, which were not even human anyways, although they've mixed it up now, where they're saying that even the FBI agents are dressed in black, so now they're being called Men in Black. Men in Black were totally different. They're all telepathic. Most of those species were all telepathic. Now, if you go down below that, starting in Lima, Peru, February, March 1947, these are all one-time occupants that were seen only one time, and they quickly pack up in their UFOs if they were spotted by accident or whatever. And I have a late uncle, actually, who had an encounter similar to these ones. Now, these ones you don't hear so much anymore about. Now you only have the repeat offenders, which are the abduction-performing ones. You know, the praying mantises, the little greys, the tall greys, the reptilians, the Nordics. And Travis Walton, that's the thing with the movie Fire in the Sky. They never showed the fact that he actually encountered Nordic people as well as the not gray, The ones he saw, unlike the movie where they look like brown colored, brown skinned little gray, wrinkled little men.
The little slitty eyes and the slitty mouth. Yep.
Yeah, his were more like marshmallow because I asked him about the texture of the skin. And when he pushed it back, it was almost like putting your fingers in fresh bread dough.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd asked him that way back in 93 before the movie came out on the phone, and that's what he told me. And I said, how are you going to handle the media? He says, I'm just bracing myself for the onslaught. But ever since then, now he's been speaking at conferences, and it takes a while for you to get him talking. Well, me talks more now, but back then he was so quiet, he had to initiate the conversation. And it was just anyway. So the occupants page is very important because it'll show people that there's I've got 85 species on there, including one which was a photograph taken by a police officer in Falkville, Alabama, in 1973. The only photo ever taken of a natural occupant. It looks like a guy, a firefighter, wearing an aluminum foil suit, but this thing outran the police car. So. But all these sketches I took was from Linda Moulton Howe's book, and I later got permission. Well, I got permission from her to use anything like that because it's important to show people the creatures that have been seen throughout the world, you know, aside from the ones that are performing abductions. You can't mix the two. My late uncle, he saw something fantastic, and maybe I can get into that really quick after the break.
Okay, we've got about 40 seconds left. Isn't this fascinating, guys, to actually, you know what, I would love to get Travis Walton on my show because, you know, when we first saw, you know, my mum and I were watching Fire in the Sky and we saw those creatures, oh my God, they freaked me out because they looked so horrific and scary, you know, and the ship was all dirty and everything, and I'm thinking, no way could that be that dirty. Okay, we're going to be back on the other side of the break.
You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
Your protection from deception.
TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
And we are back with the Nikki Colombo Show, and we are having an absolutely fascinating conversation with Michelle Deschamps. And I tell you what, I just want to thank you, sweetie, for documenting all of this for our future generations. It must have taken you ages to put all of this together, you know. And you know what, guys, I really encourage you to go on his site and share. They can share their links, the links on there, can they, with photos and stuff like that? Is that right?
They can email me through the site. Yeah.
Okay. So they email you first and ask permission to send the links of photos and stuff like that on Facebook. Is that right?
I can link it over to Facebook, or you can. They can do anything they want because the site is free access. And my email is actually, you're going to find this funny, but it's the same as my license plate. My license plate on my car is UFO Man. I got lucky with that one. I mean, when I saw Don Campbell and his license plate, UFO Don, I said, well, I'll check with the registry of automotive licensing. And I was surprised that UFO Man was not taken. I met another man down in Toronto who was a senior editor for City TV, one of the television stations there, and his license plate said UFO Guy. And I said, how come you didn't get UFO man? And he said, well, my wife always called me UFO guy. And then there's another man who, again, worked at one of the mine sites here. His name, his license plate, his name is Lorne Johnson, but his license plate says UFO kid. So I kind of joked that he's my son because he's actually older than me. He's retired. But it's like we have UFO man, UFO Don, UFO kid. But anyways,
oh, you're not passionate about this subject at all, are you?
Yeah, well, my email address is UFOman_1, the number one, at hotmail.com.
Wonderful. Okay, go on.
No, no, but there's a link to that. It's that same email. I used to have a different email for the website, but it was eventually when my late web host passed away, I was left to try to figure out like how to have two different emails. So I decided to just make it one and the same.
Okay, wonderful. Now, I've forgotten. What were we talking about just before the break you were going to get into?
My late uncle had a sighting, just to talk about the kind of things you have to look for in a sighting or a landing, the odd physics that comes with an actual sighting, which can easily distinguish it from a man-made object. This was Christmas of 1981. This is on the side of my mother's side of the family. My grandmother was there. My cousin Louis, who's a seventh grader, he teaches seventh graders. He's a teacher. And his dad, my uncle, they were all sitting in the living room. And all of a sudden, the living room all lit up in red. And initially, they thought, oh, the neighbor is backing out with their car. And we're talking like, you know, it's winter. And it's very cold, and it's in northern Quebec. That's where I'm originally from, and then we moved here when I was four and a half, 1968. My uncle was telling me the story, and when he told me the story, his eyes just glazed right up, and so you knew that he saw something. And I know it's Christmas time, people are having a few drinks, but he said he took a chance, and he looked outside, and he said what he saw. And this is the whole physics thing about how different UFOs are from man-made objects. This ball of fire was sitting on the snow. And I don't think he said it was too big, maybe a meter and a half across. And next to it were these two small occupants, like we're talking like 29 inches tall or 30 inches tall. And he says they looked like they were wearing bell bottoms, like the pants that the hippies used to wear in the 60s, because they would fan out at the base. And I says, why would your attention be brought to anything below the waist? It's because one of the little guys had a probe or a stick, and he was poking at the snow like as if, what the hell is this stuff? and then he says, then the object, as quickly as he saw it, it just left the area. And he says it left so fast, I thought for sure one of the little guys was left behind. But anyways, when they went outside to check, and we're talking like winter, so it's there's snow. They looked all over, and this big red ball of fire never melted the snow right down to the grass. There was no trace of that. There was no footprints. And so a lot of cases, and some of the cases, the classic cases, there's been flying UFOnauts where the beings themselves hover above the ground by 2 to 3 inches, not leaving any tracks. And that's why it floors me when I hear people using abduction cases as a forefront to explain the reality of this, when they should be first looking at sightings and then landing physical trace cases like Ted Phillips has done out of Missouri in the States. I investigated a landing site actually on a place called Manitoulin Island. If you look in North America, you'll see the five Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. Well, Sudbury is just northeast of the Great Lakes, and Manitoulin Island is only about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from here, and it's my Cuba. That's where I go. I don't fly. I don't have a passport, and I don't go to the Dominican Republic like some of my coworkers do. I go to Manitoulin Island. The water is crystal clear. You can, if they had coral reefs there, you'd swear you're in the ocean. The water is that blue, turquoise, whatever. And I go there because there's a lot of UFO sightings. We have First Nation reservations that are there. our Aboriginal, like our native people, their belief in the sky people goes way back to thousands of years. And
oh,
also,
yeah, you know, when you ask the Native American Indians and you ask the Australian Aboriginals, where did you guys originally come from? They point to Pleiades. Mm. Yeah, it's definitely a tie there.
And there's also Bigfoot sightings in the area, too, which I found out. And that surprised me because I originally thought that Bigfoot was out west in the Rocky Mountains. But he's been all over the place. And mm-hmm. and actually, there was 14-inch footprints that were reported here north of here in a neighboring town called Capriol. And I said, holy crap, I guess it's, the big guy gets around. But and he's been linked with a lot of UFO sightings as well because they seem to coincide in observation of the same locations. So a lot of times, for a while, I think people thought that maybe Bigfoot was something they let off the ship. I even thought that at one time. Or not necessarily an occupant or a pilot, but something that was let loose. But now I believe it's something that branched off of us.
That could be a possibility. I've heard they're very psychic as well. They kind of know, you know, like they can read your auric field. They kind of know what you're thinking or what you're going to do or what kind of moves you're going to make. I know they show up at the East Seti Ranch a lot with James Gilliland, and they pop in and they kind of play funny little tricks and they're quite humorous. They can actually tell when someone has got a good heart or not. And so if someone is out there to try and trap them, that's why they can never really, you know, find them or trap them, because they're highly psychic and they've probably got an underground tunnel system that they're, you know, yeah. with their big feet and their long legs, they can probably, you know, get from one place to the next in, you know, a couple of hours or whatever, because they're so tall and highly psychic. So there's definitely yeah. a tie in that as well. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, you guys have the Yowie, so... I don't know how many reports have been made of that creature out where you guys are, but there's variations. I mean, there's the Yeti and the Himalayans.
Yeah.
You know, there's another creature similar to Bigfoot, but up in Alaska, probably white haired, you know, covered in white. But that's, and then there's the swamp thing or the swamp ape, in the Everglades in Florida. So it's, and who knows? I mean, there's so many, we live in an amazing universe and on an amazing planet that has so many mysteries that are yet to be explained. And the sad thing is, even if an historian, for instance, wanted to write a book about history, there's so many missing pieces of the puzzle that's been done by the powers that be because of propaganda and lying to us, that there's no way to portray an accurate representation of our history. And then you've got these UFOs that come into play. I mean, my religious beliefs would have been okay if it hadn't been for UFOs showing up and all of a sudden not necessarily destroying my religious beliefs, but expanding on them and realizing that maybe there's a connection there, that there are creators and that, or some of them, not all of them, and they're keeping tabs on us by doing these abductions. So almost by rights, they have a right to access to us, because for all we know, we could be an anthill or lab rats, you know, obviously more evolved lab rats, but I mean, nonetheless, a product of their genetic manipulation and whatever was already living here before, like proto-humans, and just simply came over and tweaked us over time to make us what we are today. Or whether or not it's for trades, we're obviously not on an even keel. So I don't believe that we're really necessarily working hand in hand with them. I mean, we're like insects to them in a way. And but at the same time, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of abduction reports where they seem to be showing us something, or how their ships work, or showing us where they come from. But what's the point? Like, where is it going to lead up to, you know, with the military interfering or the super, super secret group that's in the middle of all this stuff? You know, the people who have known from the get-go that there's been UFO crashes and retrieval of alien bodies and hardware. I mean, whether they know the whole story, I have my doubts, but it's like, to what end? And we're left scratching our heads, whether we're researchers or first-time observers of UFOs. we're on the same page as wondering what this is. And the thing is, it's not paranormal. What's paranormal is our state of mind, because we're still in the cradle. Actually, we've made it over the bars of the cradle, and we're basically exploring for the first time. We're not even spacefaring species yet. We're just opening our eyes to this stuff. This stuff has always been normal. It's our state of mind that's paranormal, because we're not used to it. But now we're opening our eyes to it. We're being forced to open our eyes to it.
Yeah, we are. You know, once your consciousness expands after you see certain things in the sky or have certain experiences, your consciousness expands and your ESP kicks in and you start to open up and you learn more and more about it. And I know that, you know, for me, you know, when you read certain ancient texts, when they were considered gods with a little g, to me, they were ETs, because, you know, there were so many different types that were for us. Some of them had different treaties. Some of them were against us. And trying to unravel everything like that is like a big ball of, you know, cotton that's been tied up in loops and loops and loops. And what we're trying to do right now is undo this big, you know, cough ball of, yeah, tied up loops and unraveling everything. And you know it's amazing, the wonderful experiences. It's not all bad, you know. We have, you know, malevolent, you know, and we have abductions, but sometimes those abductions are good abductions because they're upgrading us in certain, you know, levels of our consciousness, because they're, yeah, a part of our galactic family. And in some experiences, that's what I've had as well. So we get a little bit of both. But we've also got to learn about discernment so that we, you know, understand what's going on with us. And do you know what? A lot of us have come to a new realization. Now, we don't actually hold those experiences in a negative way anymore. We actually have come to a new understanding about actually, yeah, what's going on, because at the beginning it can be very frightening. But now you've come to an experience, a new level of consciousness now, where I used to get really pissed off at the fact that, you know, my DNA was taken. But now, you know, because to me it was like a violation of human rights and how dare they and all that kind of stuff. But now, you know how I look at it now, and this is what being a true alchemist is all about, and transmuting something that was negative experience into something positive. And now I look at it as, you know what, I'm the grandmother of a future generation of hybrids, and I find that a bit of an ego boost to my personality now, where it helps me understand and get over these frightful experiences at the time were just absolutely traumatic. And I look at it from a different point of view now, and I go, okay, I get it, you know, and I've made peace with it, and I can kind of move on, you know. So I think that's what's happening now. That's why we do these shows, to bring lots of people, yeah, on that are authentic, have a high integrity and do a lot of work for humanity to get this information out. And, you know, I really commend, yeah, you about doing all of that, Michelle. That is fantastic that you've done all that stuff. It's taken you probably ages and years to put all this, you know, data together. My God.
Well, I've said this before, and maybe some people don't believe me. It says I may have been born in Canada, and I may live in Canada, but I pledge my allegiance to the planet. And I've said that before, and I'll say it again, because to the alien races, we're one race, one planet, with multiple people, and they gave us the language. And my mom used to get upset. She still gets upset sometimes, because it says, how come your website is not equally balanced, bilingual, you know, French and English? I says, Mom, the terminology mostly is in English, and English is a universal language. And it's the easiest language to learn.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
you know what? It's probably hard for you to actually translate the correct words into French to describe exactly those experiences, because ufology really has certain words and terminologies that really has become a language within itself, yeah, don't you reckon?
Yeah. Exactly. And so it's so... Oh yeah, there's an evolution in itself when you come to realize that you've had your first sighting and then a second sighting, and I myself never really experienced fear that way. I think the most fearful experience I've had was I nearly drowned about over 20 years ago in July of 1988, and so I'm living on bonus time. And so I'm
thankful. Was that a near-death experience, do you think?
I saw my life flash before my eyes. I was probably minutes away from drowning, but I got rescued by a vacationing doctor from Buffalo, New York.
Oh, how's that for synchronicity, huh?
Yeah. So, so it's a life altering experience, and I realize that I can't be arrogant and I can't be sitting on information like some people do. That's why I won't donate my collection to a UFO group. I'm going to donate my entire book collection, DVDs, whatever, to the local library because I want it to be accessible to people. Most of the collections, well, it was the same situation for one of my UFO reports, which I sent to Toronto, to MUFON Ontario in Toronto. And it sat in somebody's closet for 3 years. Nobody was using it to even educate people or tell people about my sighting. And I had measurements and everything else. And I have very, very short video, a daytime video and a nighttime video. And I know what I saw and I know what I've got on tape. But it's so short in duration, you can't really use it. But that's when I found out that you can't give your collection to somebody because it may sit in somebody's basement for years and never see the light of day. And I don't agree with this kind of stuff. It needs to be out there, accessible to people. So I'm donating my entire collection. I've written it in my will that the local library branches, there's three or four of them, will get a share of all that I have accumulated. And
that's fantastic. That's so fantastic, you know, because that's similar to what they do with the free energy people who actually those scientists that are out there making free energy devices, and then they patent them, and then they're just held in this patented vault for years and years and years, and they never come out. And sometimes those scientists actually disappear. So it's not actually getting out there because of these powers that were in brackets. Are terrified of us discovering our true power, not only within ourselves, but also with these new fantastic free energy devices that could be, you know, that could change our world. And, you know, it would just be an amazing world to live in, wouldn't it, where there was no poverty and people had free energy and they wouldn't have to pay for their bills anymore. There wouldn't be any wars anymore. There wouldn't be any of that, you know.
Because there's nothing that's divided people more than religious beliefs and ownership of land or property. You know, we don't – like the First Nation people will tell you we don't own the land. We belong to it.
There's no separation.
And, you know, and the thing is like that freedom we should have had a long time ago with the free energy. Because hydroelectric power can only go so far, especially in these electric vehicles, which is like, ooh, ah, wow, great. Now, you look at this technology that UFOs have, it's obviously better than hydroelectric. It's obviously better than nuclear. Doesn't leave any radiation whatsoever. In some cases, yes, but very little compared to what we have, you know. And it would be a world-changing event to have that kind of freedom where we'd have as much money as anybody else. You would have no thieves. You'd have nobody wanting to steal your stuff because they would have equally the same things. So I don't know. It's like, I don't know what it would take to change all that. Maybe the presence of the aliens themselves would be enough to scare us in our boots and say, holy shit, there is somebody out there who could kick our asses if they wanted to. And we can't do what we've been doing, which is screw each other over for a piece of the action without having any accountability for it.
You know, you've just triggered me. You know my favorite saying. You know, in the movie Aliens 2, where Sigourney Weaver, she finds out that guy has betrayed them, and she's got him sitting down, and all the other guys are going, "Hey, man, you're dog meat," you know. And then she says, you know, "I don't know who's worse. You don't see them screwing each other over for a percentage."
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That is one of my favorite. That's another one that's going on my bumper sticker or my T-shirt too. You know what I mean? I'm like, what does that say? I mean, it takes a certain type of person to, when you come into certain powers or technology or whatever it is, that you use it wisely. I know that when my ESP first started to come in and my manifestation skills started to manifest a little bit quicker, I call them my superpowers. You know, I had to realize that, you know, I have to be very careful about and take great responsibility with certain you know, ESP technologies that I discovered within myself, because you can hurt not only yourself but other people too. So you really do have to take responsibility for it. And this is why I feel like I've been here before. I've done all that kind of stuff. I've been there, done that with that, you know, gone into the greed and gone into the selfishness, and I've kind of, you know, transcended all that. And now I'm in a position where it's much easier for me to say no, because I'm like you. I'm for the planet as well. And even though, you know, years ago when I first started having these experiences, I used to feel like I'm an alien on my own planet. And I used to say, I'm an alien on my own planet. And yet, you know, I care about the planet more than the people who are actually originally from here, you know? I mean, like, get your head around that, guys. It's just incredible. You know, we've got to take care of our planet. And these technologies coming in should be, you know, welcomed without any, you know, suppression, so that we can have a fantastic world. I'm sure that there are other planets out there. They don't have money and they live in a fantastic world, which is what we just described. You know, I just really hope that I actually get a chance to actually see it. What do you reckon, Michelle?
Yeah, well, I hope that you do, because we don't have a place that we can readily move to right now. If, let's say, the planet were to go to the shits, if it's overly polluted, heavily polluted. And as far as surpopulation, I mean, I used to read books in high school about that. I mean, there's still places. I mean, if with technology like that, you could almost terraform the Sahara Desert to have greenhouses and people can feed themselves instead of fighting over pieces of land that are totally worthless, you know, or whatever. Like I said, it would stop a lot of wars if you have the technology to actually regreen, like, you know, like terraform the Sahara Desert and have people grow their own food and be self-sufficient instead of being oppressed by the more powerful people, that the elite or whatever, that have all the cushy vacations and the cushy all the money and the financial backing. I mean, if it'd be all more equal across the board, I think a lot more people would be happier, and there'd be no need for all that misery and poverty and whatever. And so that's got to break loose at some point, you know, because I'm surprised that we've come along this far. Sometimes I even think, you know what? I think humanity's had its run. I think we should just all die out and leave the aliens to take over and you know, bring this planet back to its pristineness.
A reset.
Yeah. Because we've done an awful lot. We say the aliens are evil, or they're this or they're that. And yet, how many millions of people have we killed in the first two world wars, or in any wars in between? I mean,
exactly. And what about Fukushima? I mean, what a mess that is with the radiation. You know, if we had these free energy devices, we wouldn't have all that stuff that would eradicate all that.
And in the States, a lot of those nuclear power plants are actually built on fault lines. Go figure.
Oh, yeah.
So things can happen there just as well as it happened in Japan, easily, you know. And it's like, oh, my God. And then we don't even have, like, we're able to produce nuclear power, but we don't have the means and the technology to bring it back to a non-toxicity level where we can put it back in nature. We were really good at building things, but we're not really good at making things, but we're not really good at disposing of them properly.
And cleaning up our own mess too. Okay, so we've got about 30 seconds. I just want to thank you for coming on, Michelle. Thank you so much. And give us your website again just before we finish up to the top 2 hours.
Okay, New Force. It stands for Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study. And you can contact me through that anytime. And I was just amazed, and this is a total pleasure for me to have been on your show.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute honor, and I encourage everyone to go on Michelle's site and have a look at the most fantastic database that he's collected.